Welcome to ACC Nation. That's Will Ogenen. I'm Jim Quist, and our special guest from Busting Brackets is Tristan Freeman. Thanks for joining us, Tristan.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, we're in that 45 or day plus or minus countdown range to the start of the college basketball season. And look, it's never too early to talk hoops, because if you're a fan, you know, you think about it year round, and it's always in our minds as well. So we thought, hey, this would be a good time to get Tristan on and talk about the way too early top 25. We're going to talk about two of them, one from April and the most current from mid-September. So we're going to treat you folks to some hoops here and whet your appetite just a little bit. So like I said, Tristan, let's go back to the April version, and then we'll work our way forward to the most recent edition, because there was a lot of changes between the two, which is not unusual because there's a lot of things going on, and we thought we'd ask you about why certain teams have moved in the wrong direction for them. Others have moved up. So let's take a look back at the top five that was from April. At five was Baylor. At four was Alabama. At three, Michigan. At two, Ohio State. And at number one, I think, I don't know if we're going to all agree on this or not, but it seems like Gonzaga is the team to beat this season. And then the latest power rankings came out, and that top five looks a little bit different. So let's talk a little bit about that top five and why it's different. The April version had at number five, Baylor. Now, in the most recent, at number five is Michigan. Tell us about Michigan and what's so different about Michigan this season, and what are they bringing to the court?
Yeah, Michigan's floor was always going to be high as soon as Hunter Dickinson decided to return. You know, he was one of the few freshmen that played above his potential All-American season. They didn't lose a lot of seniors. Some teams were able to keep theirs, but Michigan lost not only their seniors, but also lost Franz Wagner to the draft. But they had a number one recruiting class coming in. Six guys, all top 60 or better. A couple of five-star prospects, Caleb Houston, who I think will replace Isaiah Livers without issue. Musa Diabate, who is one of the better combo big men in the class. And they were always going to be in a top 10 range, depending on what happened. But once they added Devontae Jones, the Sun Belt Conference Player of the Year guard from Coastal Carolina, it pretty much gave them, along with Eli Brooks returning, that veteran core backcourt that was going to keep them in right in the Big Ten picture. They have the front court already set. The wings, as long as Caleb Houston looks as advertised, their floor is one of the highest in the country. And if their freshman plays well, I could see them being number one at some point this season.
The next up is number four, Texas. And this is a big leap. But this is where the transfer portal has been very good. And Texas looks really like somebody who is going to give Gonzaga a run when it comes down to the tournament.
You can argue that from a roster standpoint, just from individual talent, Texas has the best in the country. I mean, the transfers they added, if you did like a top 100 rankings, Texas probably got six in the top 40 or so. I mean, Trey Mitchell was a 20-10 guy at UMass. Dylan Disu, you know, Vanderbilt was awful, but Disu had 15-9 quietly. You added Utah transfer and Timmy Allen, who's a versatile forward that can score from the mid-range. And then to add all that, you have Marcus Carr, who was a 20-6 guy at Minnesota. He puts up numbers. You can argue that his teams weren't good, but he wasn't surrounded with a lot of talent. You now put him in Texas, and he could flourish. And that's even without realizing that they returned two double-digit scorers in Courtney Ramey and Andrew Jones. From if you add all their production from last season, it adds up to nearly 120 points a game. They're obviously not going to score 100 points this season, and there's going to be a couple of guys who are going to have to sacrifice their production. But assuming Chris Beard can make it work and can get these guys to gel, they're going to be in the top five pitcher all season long and could easily be a national title contender, assuming everything works out.
The number three team on the busting bracket's top 25, I think, is a team that I would classify this as kind of controversial in some ways. It's UCLA, obviously. A lot of people are putting them up there based off of the tournament run, but at the same time, this was a team that for 95% of the season was a bubble team at best. But at the same time, they pretty much returned that entire team. So what is it about UCLA that makes you think they can carry that momentum from the tournament over into this season?
Yeah, I think not only did UCLA have a great tournament run, but the entire Pac-12 did. And if you remember how the season started, the Pac-12 basically nixed their non-conference due to their own COVID policies. So they were playing behind the eight ball when it comes to how we viewed the conference in general, and they all effectively beat up on each other. So you could argue that UCLA played a lot better than they did resume-wise. You also can say that had Michigan State actually beat them in that playing game, we wouldn't be thinking about them like that. But when you return a guy like Johnny Juzang, who's going to be on All-American mentions, you have Jaime Jaquez, who's one of the best versatile players in the country. And besides bringing back everyone, you add in a five-star prospect in Peyton Watson, who's an outstanding wing. You add Rutgers big man transfer Miles Johnson, who nearly averaged double-double at Rutgers. There's just so much talent and depth that it's hard to not have them at the very least top 10. And when you consider that there's going to be chemistry and their continuity they have compared to teams like Texas, that's going to have to take a minute to gel. I do think they're warrant a top five spot, but they're also going to be someone that if they falter a bit and struggle in a non-conference, people are going to have an I told you so attitude about them.
All right. The number two team is Kansas. And I think they're obviously going to be a really good team this year. They got Ochai Agbaji back after testing the draft waters. But I think the biggest addition for them is Remy Martin, who was pretty much a human bucket anytime he was on the court for Arizona State. So what is it about Kansas that puts him at number two?
Yeah. I think their starting lineup has next to no weaknesses. If you look at Remy Martin, he's a prolific scorer at Arizona State. He can shoot the ball, score 20 a game. He's an offensive upgrade over Marcus Garrett for sure. And because Abaji's coming back, you're not going to worry as much as any defensive limitations because you already have an elite perimeter defender in Agbaji coming back. Christian Braun is an outstanding scorer. He can shoot 40% from three in the wing. And then the front court duo, Jalen Wilson and David McCormick. McCormick had sort of a breakout campaign towards the latter half of the season. I think he's going to make a case for one of the best bigs in college basketball. And that's not even including the transfers, Joseph Yesufu from Drake and Jalen Coleman-Lance, who's in his seventh season from DePaul and all over the place. They have so much depth, talent, the coaching and Bill Self. They're probably, if it wasn't for the fact that Gonzaga has two of the best three players in the country, I think any other year Kansas would have been the number one preseason team.
And we might as well on that topic bring up number one Gonzaga. Obviously fell short in the national championship game to just a much more physical team, but they continue to roll. They got Drew Timmy back. They bring in Chet Holmgren from nearby me in the Minneapolis area. I mean, one of these years it's gotta happen for them, right?
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at teams like Kentucky and Duke, they haven't made the Final Four in a while, despite consistently having top two recruiting classes. You know, the NCAA tournament, there's a lot of luck involved. And eventually, if you make the tournament every year and you make the Sweet 16, now going on 6-7 years in a row, eventually the odds are going to get Gonzaga a title. And it could very well be this upcoming year. Everybody has Drew Timmy, has the consensus number one returning player. Chet Holmgren is the the college unicorn. Who knows what he's going to do? He's going to dominate the WCC. And amazingly, they bring in a guard who's ranked higher out of high school than Jalen Suggs and Hunter Salas, who's a top 10 prospect. And he might not even start. Andrew Nembhard is going to be an All-American candidate. He was fantastic after getting the waiver for Gonzaga. Rozier Bolton averaged nearly 16 a game at Iowa State, and he's going to play with a much better support and cast. There's so much talent. There's four other top 60 guys that are going to be role players, like Anton Watson, Ben Gregg, Julian Strother. And that's not even including Nolan Hickman, who decommitted from Kentucky, top 20 player, and went to Gonzaga. Gonzaga has four point guards that could any other year run their offense, and they're going to have so many different lineups. The only concern with them is shooting without Corey Kispert around, but even then, there's just so much talent, and they're going to be able to score so easily with Holmgren and Timmy that they had to get the number one preseason spot.
Some questions for you before we get into the ACC. I know that the impact of the COVID seniors has been pretty great. We've seen that in pretty much all sports so far. But let's talk about the transfer portal for a second. It seems to me like I've think that over the last couple of years that we've seen this continual upgrade and improvement in college basketball overall. It's much more competitive. Give us some of your thoughts on how the transfer portal is having an impact on college hoops.
Yeah, I mean, for some, it's controversial, but I'm just a big believer that if a player doesn't want to be at that school, it's not helpful for the player or the school for them to be there. I think chemistry is a big concern sometimes when it comes to how teams operate. In the transfer portal, you can more or less have rosters that have the buy-in because everybody wants to be there one way or the other. And when you look at all the teams with the transfers, rather than having really good guys on average or bad teams by themselves, they're effectively linking up and creating, you could almost say, super teams when you have Remy Martin joining Kansas when normally he wouldn't have to. Or even in other cases, when you can have the NBA draft, you have players now with choices. And whenever you have the ability to make your own decisions, it doesn't necessarily mean that it hurts college. You have the G League taking players. You now have overtime elite. You have the NBA draft changing the rules when it comes to agencies. So now players don't have to automatically go in and leave. And with the transfer rule having the one-time waiver, it creates a scenario where players are going to have a whole bunch of choices and options. And in a way, it works out for college basketball because many of them decided to come back. You saw this with Kofi Coburn at Illinois, who went to the draft. Normally, he would be gone, decided to come back, potentially could have went to Kentucky and ended up back at Illinois, making them top 20 teams. So I just think giving players options and opportunities is going to benefit the sport rather than mandating them and forcing them to do things where many of them will just say, I'll just go leave and guarantee to get paid.
Two questions before I flip back over to Will here. Let's stick with the transfer portal for just a second. Obviously, it's had a heck of an impact on some of the top echelon teams. But how about some of the teams that maybe not top echelon? Have we been seeing some of these players transfer into lesser-known programs and up what they're doing? Is it equal? Is what I'm shooting for here.
Yeah, it really does depend on the situation. Like there are some teams where they have one star player and he knows that he's on an average mid-major team, that he's probably, if he knows he's able to, he's going to make the leap. You saw this with, like I said, Devontae Jones. Coastal Carolina did win the Sun Belt, but they lost six seniors. So he was going to come back to a completely new and underachieving roster. So it made sense for him to go. But you're seeing a lot of these mid-major coaches, like UAB with former Ole Miss coach, forgot his name, but he comes in. He's brought in seven transfers this offseason and bolstering UAB's roster. You're seeing it out west with LMU, Mark Pope at BYU bringing in top tier transfers. So it's sort of overall balance where there are going to be some teams that are going to be decimated by transfers, but then there are going to be others who embrace the transfer portal, bring in a lot of talent. And if you can get a one breakout star out of the bunch, it could single-handedly take your team to the NCAA tournament. So there always will be ups and downs with it, winners and losers every offseason. But if you play the game right and get lucky, then it could single-handedly change the fortunes.
All right, Tristan, this is the one thing that I'm waiting on. The first millionaire NIL basketball player. You know, this name, image, likeness. I haven't really seen a lot of basketball players reaping the reward just yet. Or am I missing something here? Am I missing out?
There's a couple of examples, like Memphis with FedEx, their partnership, and Nike at Oregon, where players can potentially make a lot of money. I don't think you're going to see it year one because everyone's feeling it out. Mm-hmm. But in the future, depending on if you can get a generational type prospect, you're seeing it a little bit with Mikey Williams, who's a 2023 prospect, already signed NIL deal when it comes to his name, image, and likeness. You're going to see players make thousands, tens of thousands. It's hard to see someone get to that millionaire status because I don't think they're going to be in college long enough to do that. Like if you have one incredible year and you're a top 15 draft pick, you're going to leave. But for others, you know, like with Dickinson, he wasn't good enough to leave right away at Michigan, but he's going to have opportunity to make some money. And I think depending on what the going rate is, depending on if companies really feel there's a value into it, you're going to start seeing the price go up more and more for some of these college stars, which will help the sport because guys are going to be more likely to stay than go into a European deal if they're not a clear-cut NBA draft.
I hadn't really thought about that European aspect of it. That's a good point. Mm-hmm.
So before we get into the ACC, I actually want to ask you about another specific conference, and that's the SEC, because I am very intrigued by this conference. Obviously, I think there's five teams in the top 25, which I think any of them can really win it this year. Auburn, Arkansas, Alabama, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Obviously Kentucky is, you know, they load up on the five stars. Plus they got some, I think they're probably their biggest weakness has been filled with their shooting. Alabama, you know, they're going to shoot from three. Eric Musselman's the king of the transfer portal. It picked up Chris Likes from Miami. John Fulkerson's back at Tennessee. Auburn's got really good. So just kind of assess the top half of the ACC, because I think that could be one of the most intriguing stories in college basketball this year.
Yeah, it seems like the SEC strategy is basically literally five-star prospects or transfers. And that creates a whole lot of variance because not all five stars are the same. Some guys are one-and-done stars. Others are not necessarily bust, but guys who's going to be around for a while. And then with transfers, it's actually like 60-40 in terms of the success rate. Not every transfer is going to work out. If you want to look at who to bet on, Eric Musselman in Arkansas has the best success rate when it comes to transfer. He can mix in guys. It'll be interesting to see what Calipari did, because we all talked about Wake Forest transfer, Wake Forest big man from last year who went to Kentucky.
Olivier Saar.
Yes, thank you. Yes, Saar. And he was almost a consensus, you know, number one impact transfer. He'd had next to no impact realistically. So they're going to do it again with Oscar Tshiebwe from West Virginia. Hopefully he'll have a bigger impact. They got Kellen Grady, CJ Frederick. They got the five stars and Damian College and Ty Washington. You can make an argument any of the five teams can not only win, but they could also potentially flame out and miss the tournament. All of those games are going to be interesting. It's hard to see who has the clear-cut edge, but if you want to make it, if you want to bet safely, it will probably be Arkansas for now. But the SEC, it's going to be very fascinating because there's so many ways all of those teams can go. And there's probably a good 11 teams potentially that can make a tournament. You know, Ole Miss had some really good transfers. Texas A&M got some really good transfers as well. And if any of them can break out, they'll be tournament good, because there's certainly going to be a lot of top 25, top 50 opportunities to enhance their resume.
Is St. Bonaventure the best non-power conference team not named Gonzaga?
They have the highest floor. I think that if you turn the safest bet, you never know which other mid-majors could potentially, you know, uprise them, even in the A-10 itself. But you have one of the best defensive big men in the country in Osuna Suni. Kyle Offen's a fantastic point guard. They got three other double-digit scorers back. They're just the sort of the safest bet, because their defense, you know, is going to be fantastic. And they got enough scoring to be competitive. But Richmond returns four starters as well. They're going to be up there. BYU loses their WCC Defensive Player of the Year, Matt Harms, but brings back an All-American, Alex Barcelo, as well as a couple other good transfers. I think the early bet would be St. Bonaventure, but there is probably 10 mid-majors not named Gonzaga that has at-large potential. And it's thanks to transfers and a lot of seniors opting to come back for fifth year.
True. And low key, I think the WCC might actually be a fun conference to watch if you're up for it, besides from Gonzaga, because I think obviously BYU looks really good. I think San Francisco looks really good too. I know they have that Jamari Bowie. I believe he's back this year. I remember watching him a lot last year. But anyways, let's move on. I want to get into the ACC. We've kind of put it off long enough, and this is going to be known as the Coach K Farewell Tour, and it's going to be ingrained in our heads for the next, you know, 6 months. But I do think that the front court is going to be the strength of this team. I'm a big believer of Mark Williams. He played so well towards the end of the season. I think he'll probably be preseason player of the year. And there's obviously Paolo Banchero, who is a 7-footer who can hit the outside shot. But I think there's my question, though. Like, guard play is still a bit of a question for me. What do you see with Duke?
Yeah, I think this team's going to come and go with Jeremy Roach. I mean, he wasn't the point guard last year. You saw what happened when Jordan Goldwire was the leader. Their ceiling just dramatically dropped. Roach is a combo guard, and that can always be tricky, because some combo guards are really just undersized shooting guards who bring the ball up. But point guards, you have to facilitate, initiate the offense, make everyone better. Can Jeremy Roach do that with such a young team? Or is this going to be a scenario where, you know, Banchero has to lead himself and be really the guy who can create his own offense? I think there's a lot of talent for Duke. Trevor Keels is going to be a really good shooter. I agree with you that Mark Williams is going to be a breakout star. AJ Griffin's going to be someone who flies under the radar a bit, but can easily be a 15-point scorer himself. It's going to come down to the top stars being great on both ends, because there's just not a lot of depth. They're honestly one injury away from having to run out 6-man lineups per game. And that's a little concerning. But from a ceiling standpoint, they have the highest in the ACC.
All right, let's move a few miles up the road to Chapel Hill, where we have a new coach in Hubert Davis, who was Roy Williams' right-hand man for a number of years and absolutely deserved the chance. And they have their roster makeup is a lot similar to that. They have a really good front court, Armando Bacot, but Caleb Love, I think in a similar situation, he's going to be the reason North Carolina succeeds. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I'm high on the Tar Heels. I think from a roster standpoint, they have the best in the ACC. I think their transfer pickups of Brady Manick from Oklahoma and Dawson Garcia Marquette was perfect for them, because it allows them to get out of that traditional too big in the paint lineup. And that has its issues. Because the lack of spacing can affect the guards. And you saw that with R.J. Davis and Caleb Love. When they couldn't create their own offense, it's kind of hard to do so when you have two bigs clogging the lane and neither of them can spread the court. But now you can have Brady Manick as one of the best stretch forwards in the country. Garcia can do the same. It's going to open up for everyone. And I think if we were more certain about Coach Davis in his first year, I think UNC probably would have been the near unanimous pick to win the league from a roster standpoint. But they have Final Four potential if things can click. And if Caleb Love can take that next step, as I think he can.
So let's go back to April again, the way too early, top 25 then. The honorable mention team at that point was Louisville. They've been bumped by Virginia, who comes in at the honorable mention point with the September release. Number 18 was Virginia Tech, who's disappeared. And then, of course, North Carolina State, Florida State, and Duke. The teams that have dropped here, and I'm not talking about Tech dropping off or Louisville dropping off, but North Carolina and Florida State both have dropped in the rankings. So let's talk a little bit about, let's go back to Louisville first and why Louisville dropped out and why Virginia Tech has dropped out of the most current way too early. Well, it's not really way too early. It's just a preseason top 25 power ranking. So yeah, let's talk about those two teams.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even necessarily as much as them dropping, but when you have Memphis getting Imani Bates and Jalen Duren in July, you have Illinois getting back Kofi Coburn, Texas Tech bringing all those transfers. It really was more about other teams elevating themselves into that, which by consequence pushes teams out. Louisville, their thing is, I'm not sure if they have a single top 100 player on their roster, but I think they have eight guys who you would put between 100 and 200 country. They have a lot of depth. They have a lot of good, solid pieces, but who's going to be that star? You know, we've been waiting for Samuel Williamson to be that guy, former five-star guy, but he's really just a solid two-way player, rebounder, can get you maybe 10 points in the game, but I don't think he's going to be that 15-18 guy that they look for. Malik Williams, his health is still in question, but he's a really good big. They bring in two top-tier JUCO prospects in Sidney Curry and L. Ellis, but JUCO transfers in the Power Conference can go one or two ways. They can be really good impact players, or they cannot see any time at all. So Louisville, I think they have a fairly low floor, a fairly low ceiling, but pretty decent floor. I don't think they're top 25 good, but they're going to be a solid tournament contender throughout the year. And as far as Virginia Tech goes, the loss of Tyrese Radford late was a pretty big one. He's a very unique guy. He's 6'3", but can get you nearly 10 rebounds a game if need be. And the addition of Storm Murphy at the point guard over Radice Abide is a huge offensive upgrade, but you're a little concerned of what the backcourt's going to be outside of Murphy and Naheem Aline. You know, Aluma is going to be a conference player of the year candidate. Justin Mutz is a fantastic all-around glue guy. But I think there's still some questions as to whether or not they really overachieved due to COVID because they fell off a bit, or are they genuinely a top 25 caliber team outside of Aluma when there's some pretty good questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when it comes to Virginia, you've got Kihei Clark, but of course you got the ECU transfer, Jaden Gardner, coming in. But was there anything else there that, you know, was a plus for Virginia getting into the honorable mention category?
Yeah, I mean, you're hoping Ormond Franklin, a transfer from Indiana, can be a 40% shooter. But losing both Sam Hauser and Jay Huff is just really big when it comes to the front court play. And I'm always concerned with certain systems when you bring in transfers, can they fit in that system? Is Jaden Gardner going to be that guy that can give you 20-8, but also be really good on a defensive level? You know, he was on a really awful team in ECU, but sometimes there are guys who just benefit from being on bad teams by scoring the most. And then as far as backcourt goes, Clark is who he is, a solid guy, good defender, but limited, especially on offense. You're hoping Reese Beekman can give you something, but as great a coach as Tony Bennett is, it's hard for him. You would pretty much have to put them in the top 25 because of Bennett, because this isn't a top 25 roster right now.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, there is one thing that we brought up when we were discussing some things before we got on, and that Will and I will dissect a little bit with you. You went to a Pitt practice and you saw some things there that we'd like to know more about. What did you see? What kind of impression did you get from the Panthers?
Yeah, it was really interesting because, as you know, they lost four or five starters. They lost the top three guys in Justin Champagne, Audis Tony, and Xavier Johnson. And you pretty much had a fairly new roster overall. You bring back John Hughley, who was suspended from last season due to off-the-court issues. And it was interesting to see what they were going to work on. There was a lot of defensive sets. There was a lot of we was interested to see who was going to be the offensive initiator. Was it going to be Femi Odekale or Texas Tech transfer Jamarius Burton? And it was Burton, for the most part, that was running the sets. He was the point guard for the practices. It was also interesting to see Stony Brook transfer Mo Guy, who was the defensive player of the year for the America East. He was playing a lot of the four. You know, he's a 6'9", extremely athletic big, who doesn't even need to make any effort to dunk. He's just ridiculous in terms of his athleticism. He was taking a lot of three-pointers during their sets, and he was playing a lot of the stretch four. And I think you're going to see Capel one to use as much versatility as possible with lineups. So I think you could see Hughley and Guy play together in the front court, which is interesting because Noah Collier, the backup big, was looking impressive as well, particularly on defensive end. So if you don't need Guy to be Hughley's backup at the five spot, and Collier can do that, that creates different scenarios and opportunities for Pitt on the offensive end, which is what they're going to need because it's going to be all hands on deck to replace the production they lost from the big three.
A couple more from me from the ACC before we wrap up. One of the things I have learned over the last couple of years is to never doubt Leonard Hamilton. As many times as people like to think that, you know, Florida State will be down, or, will be a little lower in the standings, he always brings them up. I'm kind of that way with them this year. I think actually they can win the league, and I'm basing that on just the way he plays, that he coaches the team. You get all these guys out with all play that, you know, he'll play 12 guys, get them playing time for down the road, basically. This is going to be the case this year because, you know, he loses, you know, four of his top scores from last season, but at the same time, you know, he continues to crush it in recruiting. So what do you think about Florida State? Can they win the league?
Yeah, absolutely. I think their defense is going to be top notch. Once again, they got four guys who are all 7 foot or bigger. That's going to be part of the rotation. They got an elite recruiting class. I think Matthew Cleveland is going to be a surprise one-and-done prospect, really good shooter at 6'6". You got Houston transfer Caleb Mills, who's going to, I think, be the likely point guard, really good offensive talent. Anthony Polite's going to be – he's a lone returning double-digit scorer. I think he has the potential to be a go-to guy. It's going to be a collective effort for sure, but their depth and defense – I think matches up really well with the rest of the ACC because I think they can handle Duke with their depth. I think they can handle UNC and just in case they shoot. And with the rest of the conference, I just don't see how many teams can match up with them on the inside. I think I think from a marathon standpoint, 20 games in the ACC, that Florida State has a really good chance to win the most for sure.
All right, let me ask you about Syracuse. This is obviously another great season going from the bubble to the Sweet 16, pretty much on the shoulders of Buddy Boeheim. Is this a situation where they're going to be pretty much right smack on the bubble again this year?
Yeah. The loss of Quincy Guerrier is big for them because they're now reliant on top 50 freshman Benny Williams to be that versatile forward that can rebound a lot, score, create his own offense. You're now hoping that Buddy Boeheim, a bounce back year from Joe Girard, and Villanova transfer Cole Swider can be an offensive juggernaut. You're also hoping that Jesse Edwards inside can be a really good big. It's just hard to see defensively how Syracuse is going to be able to stop anybody. They may be one of the four worst defenses in the ACC. There's going to be a lot of shootouts. And if you're not a good defensive team, that's going to put you in position. You even saw last year, they gave up 90 points on average to Pitt in the two losses. And that almost single-handedly knocked them out of the tournament. I don't think they're going to be any better this year defensively. I don't know who's going to be intimidated by their zone because they just don't have a lot of size or athleticism to utilize a zone. And I don't think that they have the front court play to stop anybody from wanting to go inside on them. So do they have enough offensive talent to win games that they maybe shouldn't, but they're going to lose games they should as well and be right smack dab on the bubble again for sure.
Want to thank our special guest, Tristan Freeman from Busting Brackets, for coming by and joining us, talking about some basketball and getting us all worked up for the season, which is 45 plus days away, or less, depending on where you are and when you're listening. So thank you, Tristan, for coming by and joining us and talking about basketball.
Yeah, thank you for having me anytime. I appreciate it. It was real fun.
Tristan. Very fun. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on ACC Nation. Follow us by subscribing on your favorite podcast or streaming radio platform and on YouTube. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating while you're there. Visit our homepage at accnation.net and support us via PayPal. Keep up with the latest by following us on Google News. You can find ACC Nation on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Reddit, and Pinterest. Follow Will at WillsWorldMN and I'm at ACC The Q. Cheers!
Score.